Welcome to CASBO Connect, the voice of school business. I'm Eric Dill, Vice President of CASBO.
I'm Tina Douglas, President-elect of CASBO. Right now, there's a shortage of qualified business professionals in our industry. The latest figures from FICMET indicate that 40% of current CBOs will retire or leave the industry by the 24-25 school year. School business is in desperate need of qualified CBOs. We are looking internally at you to find solid candidates to promote from within.
So this creates a career path for all CASBO members, whether they strive for the top job or the next step on the career ladder. As promotional vacancies are filled, it creates a domino effect throughout the business department. So think about it. If 40% of CBOs are planning to leave the industry in the next 2 years, that opens the door for nearly 400 directors to become CBOs. And that opens the door for 400 analysts, coordinators, supervisors, or managers to become directors. And that opens the door for 400 other staff to move into their positions. And that creates 400 other entry-level positions. So every CBO that's leaving the position is creating 1 to 5 opportunities for people to move up or to move to another district. You never know when the door will open in your district or the district next door. So you need to be prepared to move up.
So the time to act is actually right now. In this episode, we're going to talk about how to get ready for that next job, from resume building to interview skills, how to demonstrate leadership potential, and how to leverage CASBO's professional development and certifications to expand your career opportunities. So our guests are Aaron Hines, Deputy Superintendent of Administrative Services for the Colusa County Office of Education, and CASBO Sacramento Section President. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you, Tina. Pleasure to be here.
And we also have Matt Phillips, CPA, Director of Management Consulting Services for School Services of California, and also a member of the CASBO Associate Member Committee. Matt, welcome.
Thank you, Tina and Eric. It's an honor to be here.
And we also have Tracy Petrillo, EDD CAE, CASBO's Chief Learning Officer. Welcome, Tracy.
Thank you, Tina. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
So we all had to start somewhere. Some of us have had very traditional paths, but many of our members fall into school business and they think they're limited in their growth opportunities because they came late or maybe they don't have a finance background. I'm going to ask all of you to give us a very brief introduction of your leadership journey in school business. And we're going to go from most to least traditional. So think of this as that 2-minute interview question, and I'll start with Matt, then we'll go to Tina, then me, and then we finish with Aaron, who's one of the few people who can one-up me on this unique journey. Although I will say Tina is now matching me as currently as an interim superintendent in a school district. So Matt, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Thanks, Eric. I'm happy to get going. And you know, I would just throw out there that I'm not that traditional because not only did I enroll at Chico State, I graduated from Chico State. So I had many hurdles ahead of me before I ever joined the professional ranks. But to your question, you know, the background with a Bachelor of Science, emphasis in accounting, CPA, I worked for an audit firm when I first moved into the Sacramento area that just happened to be a niche audit firm that audited school districts. So we had about 30 audits every year. I got to see the good, the bad, and the ugly for many different things, which little did I know contributed to my role working in a business office for a school district for about 5 years. And then one of my life mottos, better to be lucky than good. I found myself in the absolute right place at the right time. And I was surrounding myself with the right people, Aaron included. And I had life-changing opportunity to join school services. And I've been with school services now for about 7 years.
Tina?
All right. 2-minute interview. Somebody time me on this one. I am a product of the old ROP program, which is now CTE. So I started off in a CTE class, was tapped on the shoulder to be a student worker for the San Diego County Office of Education. So my first job was cutting educational related newspaper clippings, pasting it on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and copying that for school districts throughout San Diego County. That was my first job. Made it up through the secretarial ranks, going to school for accounting at the time at San Diego State, was able to transition into accounting because I was a secretary in the internal business department that knew that I could do some of the accounting functions, and then moved over into a school district never realizing really that there was a CBO position, moved over into a school district. I think it's important to note that I took a $12,000 a year pay cut in order to get the experience needed. So I did that and then moved up the ranks and kept getting tapped on the shoulders to go to the CBO mentor program. I did that, ended up in Orange County for my first CBO role, back to San Diego County. And as Eric mentioned, a week ago, I was given the opportunity to be interim superintendent for my school district currently that I work in.
Okay. Well, I guess some of mine is ditto, but at least near the end, but I started my career in risk management, and I started at Six Flags Magic Mountain, of all places, in the risk management department there. And through that, found a career in insurance, and I worked for some insurance agencies. And I was working for a manufacturing company as their risk manager, and this company made Halloween costumes and masks and those sorts of things for the mass market. And one day, while reading the newspaper, which is something you still did in the early 2000s, I saw this tiny little ad for a loss control analyst at San Diego Union High School District. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll give public sector a try and I'll do that for a couple of years. And so I was hired there and I thought, this is an analyst position. There's probably a director and it will give me career growth opportunities. And little did I know, I was the sole person in the risk management department. But from there, they made me a director. And from there, I became an executive director and took on some additional responsibilities. And one day my CBO came to me and he said, have you ever thought of becoming a CBO? And I said, yeah, but I don't have a finance background. And he said, well, my background was personnel. He said, you can do this. There's this program called the FICMAT mentor program, and they're taking applications for their second cohort. You should do it. And so that's where I gained the skills necessary to become a CBO. And from there at San Diego, I moved up. I became the associate superintendent of business services, eventually interim superintendent at San Diego, just like Tina is now superintendent at San Diego for a couple of years. And then decided I wanted to go back into school business. And so spent a few years up in Santa Clara, both at Santa Clara Unified and Santa Clara County Office of Ed, and decided to take a great opportunity to come back to San Diego County. And now I'm at Carlsbad Unified. So, you know, from roller coasters and Halloween costumes to superintendent to CBO.
Dole Whip in there somewhere too, I might add. Yeah. And Eric hired me into the district and then left me by myself. I still love him for that.
And see how well you've done since then. You've now made it all the way to superintendent. So, okay. So somebody who has an even longer resume and even stranger jobs in their past is Aaron. So why don't you finish us up here?
Oh, thanks, Eric. So in 2000, I started a small business with a buddy of mine. We were making shot glass with a built-in chaser called the Quaffer and went across the country, going to trade shows. We were selling them. We'd sold a million of them by our second year in business. We were making pennies on the sale, on the glass, and not enough to be making any kind of money. I was doing our books. When the recession hit, the housing market crashed, and we were not able to afford both of us. And I talked with my partner and let him know, you keep going on with the company. I'm going to pull out. I'm going to go back to school. I like what I'm doing here with the books. I'm going to study accounting and see where I can go. So I went to Heald College back before it was a for-profit, and they were still, you know, training up and looking out for you. And one of the things that Heald always recommended was get an education. There's always line of work up there for you. Started applying everywhere. And I was looking at San Juan Unified in the Sacramento area. I couldn't get an interview in the business office at all. But I had some warehouse experience and I was able to get a job as a delivery driver in the food service warehouse. And so I spent about a year delivering food, making inroads, talking to people in the business office, letting them know I'm going to be here soon. And then I just kind of worked my way through a few jobs there, kept up with my education. Come 2014, I got into the FICMAT mentor program where I met Matt, and I was probably low rung on the totem pole when it came to people's positions in that class. I was an accountant at El Dorado County Office of Ed at that point, but it just taught me so much and gave me so many new angles to look at and how to move up. Bill and Francie always said that at some point you're going to be taking, and then you're going to get to a point where you can turn around and pull people up. So I've got into management. I got into a director position. I got into the deputy superintendent position. And now that's one of the best parts of my job, is trying to find people who are the superstars in the rough, and let's get you going, because that's exactly what they did for me. And that's what I'm looking forward to now. And I will say that one of the great parts of this story too is discovered that Matt's a golfer, and I'm probably 0-40-1 against him, but that one is a win for me, because you know, he's competitive too, and he doesn't like that.
Well, I should have started with my first job then, which was a caddy at a country club. And Caddyshack is not a comedy, it's a documentary.
That sounds apropos.
So it's obvious that while there may be traditional roles to promoting within your organization, there's also one that may not be so obvious. Career growth and promotional opportunities come in all shapes and sizes. Tracy, what role can CASBO play in career development?
Absolutely. CASBO is a membership organization and a professional association of people within the same community. And the exciting thing about it is a lot of individuals don't know that their district may be a member. And that means you're a member. If your district is a member, you also may not know that even if your district is not a member, you have access to many resources within CASBO. And we want to encourage you to see the value of becoming part of a community. So first and foremost, CASBO is a community of peers, of colleagues that serve many different aspects and disciplines within school business. And as the stories you just heard, just building those connections and understanding the breadth of career opportunities just within learning about CASBO is one of the advantages. CASBO is not only community, but CASBO is about content. And content is driven from individuals like all of you. We're creating this podcast. We have courses in a learning management system now. The big push, even though adult learners didn't want to go online, we all understand the need now to go online. And look at California. Look how broad we are and how difficult it is for some of our very rural and very busy individuals to get to in-person events. So we have resources online. We're coming back strong with in-person events. And building that in-person network is really, really valuable as you build career. And then we want those of you that work in the field to understand you don't have to be an expert to be an expert to teach. We want you to teach. We want you to learn where you made mistakes. We want you to learn your successes. It's very difficult to teach accounting. It's very difficult to teach standards. So we learn from each other's growth and success and failures. So we hope that throughout this conversation, you know, you'll each share about those values, parts of being in a community and of contributing content within an organization like CASBO. And we'll learn more about that as we go through the podcast today.
And you said CASBO is a community. And at one point in an interview with CASBO some time ago, I had mentioned that, you know, it takes a village, and CASBO is part of my village, and I'm a firm believer. And I think all of us in this podcast today would say that CASBO played a very big role in getting to the positions that we're in because of that community. So thank you for sharing some of that with us. And we'll talk more a little bit later. Let's just start about how do we get there? What's the first thing that we need to do in preparing for that next position? We'll talk about resume building. So Aaron, what are some of the best practices that resonate with you when you're reviewing resumes? Because all of us here, I'm sure on more than one occasion, has reviewed potential candidates for promotional opportunities. So what are some of the things that you look for?
Thanks, Tina. When we're looking for candidates for positions, we're looking for people who their story jumps off the page. And sometimes that can be education and experience that they've shown and commitment to getting a four-year bachelor's degree or a master's degree. We're looking for experience. We're looking to find somebody who's been in the industry, ideally, who has been in the business world and has some hands-on experience. And next behind that, we're looking for people who have business experience of any kind. They don't necessarily have to be in the industry. We can teach you what governmental accounting is about, but we'd like to have some people in who at least have done some numbers at some level in some organization at some point in their career.
Some of us don't always have, you know, the years of experience that you might be looking for. But one way to build your skills is through being involved in that CASBO community and learning to prepare yourself for that next step. So Tracy, I wonder if you could talk about, you know, how you can use the time and effort and professional development and participating in certifications to make your resume stand out.
Absolutely. Some of us want to go into work thinking we're done learning and there's just on-the-job training. And that's partially true. We want that to be true. But sometimes learning outside of your network and outside of the place you work makes you better at your own job. And so it's really important to consider professional development opportunities. CASBO offers certificates and certification programs, especially in the financial area, human resource area, and the executive moving toward the CBO program. And having those opportunities to engage in content around the application at work is really what helps your resume to stand out. As managers, we want to look for people who aren't afraid to keep learning and keep learning what our peers do to make the industry better. So it's not just strengthening your own resume. Your contributions can make the profession better as well. And adding those soft skills, communication, managerial skills, and volunteerism. Volunteerism is a huge way to contribute your passion for the field and you to build a peer community and a peer network that can ring your phone and say, there's a job opportunity coming up. Get your resume ready. Or I would like to recommend you to my friend who has this opportunity opening up. So part of that professional development is, again, gaining those skills in a structured way that may lead to a certification, but also building that network and community of people that are learning with you. And so they know you're interested in career development. And none of us like to lose a good employee on our team, but we always want what's best for the industry and for that person. So if that person can grow somewhere else, then that's part of CASBO. Each other is lifting each other up along our way.
And I'll say we often hire people back. And so, you know, you let somebody spread their wings in another district, and maybe there isn't an immediate opportunity internally for somebody, but there is at the district next door. And then when they're ready to come back, you welcome them with all of the experience that they learned somewhere else. So Matt, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
Yeah, just specific to the resume itself. And I think this is a theme. I can't forecast where we're going with the podcast, but this is certainly a theme that I think is important for people to take into any new opportunity, whether it's the resume stage, the interview stage, or what have you, is think about the job that you're applying for, not necessarily the job that you have right now. Whether you've got all the skill sets and you check all the boxes, or you don't check any of the boxes, but you think you would be successful in that role, that resume is the first opportunity to advertise yourself for that next job. And you don't have to have all the answers, right? If you had all the answers now, you'd already have the job, right? You're trying to get to that next level. And so no one is going to expect that you have all the answers. But when you think about writing a resume and trying to get it to stand out, you can do some homework on your end to differentiate yourself and use some buzzwords, even if it's something as simple as looking at the job description of the job that you're applying for, connecting the dots there, looking at the website of the district or charter school or county office that you're applying to, pulling some buzzwords from that website, where you want to do anything you can to try and stand out because your goal is to get to the interview. Right? That's the purpose of the resume and the cover letter or what have you. So always think about the job you're applying for, not the job you have.
Aaron, anything else to add?
Just to piggyback on Matt's thoughts and on Tracy's thoughts too, some things that I learned along the way from other CASBO members is, you know, tell your story. Your resume doesn't have to be a single page. There's an old school thought that if there's more than one page, you're hiding something. And that's just not the case. I've seen resumes that are 2 pages or 3 pages, and their font is big enough that I can actually see it and read it. You know, be conversational. Try to limit the use of bullet points. Yeah, we can see that the bullet points are what you did, but it gets monotonous. And I want to hear kind of in your voice what your narrative is of what that means. And I'm also a big advocate for including a professional summary at the top. This is the place where you can say what kind of a person you are, what kind of a leader you are, And are you a team builder? Are you a problem solver? Are you a hard worker? These are all the, this is the place at the very top where you get to start your story. And if you're not doing that right then, you should really consider putting it up there, because that's the first place I'm going to be looking. I see your name and I see where you're from, and then I see what's next. And if you skip that, then I don't really know exactly why I'm reading your piece of paper.
That's great advice, Aaron. And we all think of the old school way of you having an objective. And of course, the objective is to get the job you're applying for. And so everybody just skipped over that objective. I really like what you're saying is summarize yourself up there. So the too long didn't read version is right up there at the very top. And then, you know, rather than cutting and pasting your current job description and putting it into all of those things that you did, which will read the same way for everybody who had your job, list your accomplishments. You know, what tasks did you do? What projects were you in charge of? What savings did you find? You know, what innovation did you bring? You know, and to Aaron's point, that's how you tell your story, rather than, you know, bullet points from a very dry job classification.
Yeah. And just to piggyback, and, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but when you talk about apply, when you're filling out your resume or completing your resume, look at the job that you're applying for. I've reviewed resumes and it looks like they're applying for the position that they're in. You're a director applying for a CBO. Talk about some of those leadership pieces that you're going to be doing in that CBO role, not just checking off that, yes, I've managed this and yes, I've managed that. Translate that into something bigger. And I think that's a really important piece that you're all talking about. Aaron, you talked about, you know, applying for positions, even if you have some level of, you know, business background, et cetera. And, you know, there's also education level. What advice would you give to people who haven't completed a degree program? How can they translate on their resume so that they stand out from somebody who might have a degree, and why they would want to be screened into that process?
That's a great question. And the way that we actually get some of our best candidates that don't have a degree yet are by what they're talking to us in on the piece of paper, that they're motivated to get into education and to become a manager, and that they want to give back to the community and they want to help kids. And that story alone will touch a lot of people's, a lot of bosses' hearts, because we're all in the service industry and we're here to help the people, the kids who probably need it the most. And when you talk about that as part of your lead, that's strong. You want to talk about what might relate to the position that you're interviewing for. You can take a job that you've had and tailor it to just about anything if you really think about it. And, you know, if you worked in fast food and you were looking to get into another food service position, well, you would talk about all the things that you did there. If you were looking to get into a business position, you might talk about all the inventory work that you did and how your loss percentage was so low every month that you were there, and the things that you taught others and helped others who came after you to do the job. You want to make your story applicable, but also you want to show your strengths that you've done while you did these jobs, why that is important to the conversation that we're having now of, would you like to meet me?
Get to know me. Well, I know that, Aaron, you also have a perspective of the importance of education when working in education, and maybe you could share that with us.
Right. I've been asked lots of times by people who are moving up, you know, should I finish my degree? And the short answer is yes. The long answer is yes. We're in education. Be a model for what we do. Be the one to go out and put the time in and become an expert in your industry, in your craft. And because you're going to hit a point at some way along the road where we're talking about, we need CBOs right now. You're going to need to get a degree. You're going to get to a point where you have outkicked your coverage, and you may have risen to the level of director or coordinator or a position like that, where normally they would require a degree, but you were so good before you got there that they let it slide and they let you in. But you know, that's as far as you can get now. So put the time back in. That's something that I did directly. I was a coordinator at San Joaquin County Office of Ed, and I promoted twice within a month and a half there. And I knew right then I was in deep water and I needed to get that degree under my belt to justify what I was doing there. And while I was doing that, I'm also teaching to my staff you can do this at any time. It's never too late to go back. You know, I'm a guy in my 30s and I'm your manager and I'm going back to get that piece of paper because it's that important. I strongly encourage everybody around me to do the same.
And Aaron, just one thing, and I am in complete agreement with what you said. I applied for a position in Santa Ana Unified when I was there, 5 years ago, and they did have a requirement for a master's degree. They waived that requirement when they gave me the job, but I went back and got my master's degree because it was important for me to do that because they waived it. I thought I should at least give them the courtesy since they hired me to go and get my master's. And so I did, but I do think that's really important.
That's outstanding.
Matt, you had something that you want to add?
Yeah, I want to take a little different slant on it. Still under this umbrella of education and growing yourself, you know, you and Eric are both seasoned CBOs, and I think you'd be the first to admit that there's not a CBO out there that knows everything, right? That has all of the answers, even with the education that you've received to this point. And going back and getting, I'll take the certification route, the firsthand experience, getting some of the certifications, it's going to broaden your knowledge base, but it's also going to build your portfolio of people, right? It's going to foster those relationships, and it's going to give you an opportunity to tap into other people's brains who might have an expertise in a certain area. You know, one of the things that I see from kind of the outside looking in is the best CBOs, and we've got two of them right here. Three with Aaron. Two of the best district CBOs.
Thanks for clarifying which two you were talking about.
That's right. One of the many attributes that you have is you have great networks and you know where to go to get the answer. And if you don't have it at the tip of your tongue or on your fingertips, you know who to call. And that's invaluable. And you're not going to learn that if you are sitting on your laurels and saying, I already know everything.
For sure. So we're going to transition here because the resume gets you in the door, but the interview is what gets you the job. And since I'm the old man here, I'm going to tell a story like I'm your grandpa and talk about cohort 2 of the mentor program. That's how long ago I was involved in it. And they just finished their 18th year of that. And they did things a little bit differently back then. You didn't focus on interviewing every session like they did recently. It kind of all culminated towards the end. And we submitted our resumes and then we did mock interviews. And they divided us up to interview with different people in the room. And I was fortunate enough to be at the table with Ron Bennett. And as you know, from the mentor program, everything was intentional. And if you sat there, there was a reason they put you at that table. And also sitting with me was Rich DeNava, who is now our CASBO past president. And Ron interviewed us. And in the end, we said, okay, which one of us got the job? And Ron said, well, Eric would have gotten the job. And I was, of course, gloating. And he said, the problem is his resume was so bad, he never would have gotten in the door for an interview in the first place. So I definitely took that to heart and took a good hard look at my resume. And actually, I did have to take a good hard look at it because I had so much red ink on it that I couldn't see my own black ink of that resume. And so I knew before I even put myself out there for that next step of CBO job, I had to make sure that I had a really good resume that would resonate with somebody. So let's move on to interview skills.
I'm going to start off with Aaron. You can share with us, what is your take on the amount of work necessary to prepare for an interview? I have a quote, actually, and it's something that you used in your presentation from CASBO. If you're not prepared to put in the work before you show up for an interview, you might not really be ready for a promotion. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. And then the next line says, go back and reread that last sentence again. It's that important. You control three parts of the interview. You control the introduction and the close. The questions are the middle. So you have to put the time in to know what your story is for your introduction to build the foundation of your story. And the way that you do that is you go into a quiet room with a mirror and you practice. You got your dog or your cat there, you practice. You make sure that you are able to tell your story with no hiccups, with the way that you want to come across, with professionalism and enthusiasm. You want to make eye contact. You want to smile. You want to make sure that you're engaging your audience. So for me, just that line means if you're not really willing to put the time in and do that for yourself, then I'm not a believer that you are really a good fit for my organization, because you're probably not going to put the time in to do anything for anybody else either. So that answer your question?
It does, yes. And actually, we talked about our community, some of the connections that we made while in the FICMAT, you know, CBO mentor program. Actually, I tapped into in preparing for my first CBO job, because although I knew the finances, there were things like facilities that I wasn't as familiar with, because I didn't have any context. I've never worked with facilities before. So some of those instructors from the program, I tapped on the shoulder and said, hey, I need some help. Can you help me through some interview questions? So those connections, that community is super, super important. So yes.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll get into how we've in CASBO retooled the business executive leadership program a little bit later, but it really is important. The higher you move up in a school business organization, the more well-rounded you are. And you at least have some exposure to all of the different disciplines within school business, because as Matt pointed out earlier, none of us know everything, but we should know at least enough to discuss it intelligently and indicate where we would go for answers. You know, if you get that question that, you know, where they say, what is your experience with? And then fill in the blank, and you've never done that before, you know, you need to be able to say, but I have learned about this. I have attended these workshops. I am really good friends with this person who you all heard of, and, you know, or, you know, any number of answers, and say, and I know that I could get these resources from, and you name any number of organizations that you may belong to or that offer professional development or certifications, and say, and that's how I would, you know, fulfill that gap in my resume. So Aaron, what do you think about that?
So that's something that Matt has always said, as long as I've known him, is that a good CBO doesn't have to know everything. A good CBO just has to know where to find everything. And no truer words. That's where those connections from CASBO come in, where, you know, I don't know everything about a facilities or a transportation question, but I know exactly who I'm going to go to first, because they're the expert. And I've met them because I'm paying attention at CASBO conferences, and that I'm attending the professional councils, and I'm getting involved. And I know that there's people out there, and I have people who are going to come to me and ask me some questions. Maybe it's about interviewing or something like that, but they've asked me plenty of questions that I don't know the answer to, but I'm going to know where to direct them, and we'll find out together. And that's helping other people out too.
Okay, Matt, did he say that correctly?
He said it exactly wrong, but approximately right. You know, one of my favorite answers is when someone doesn't know the answer, I want to see how they respond to it, because they can take a couple of pathways. They can either, one of the things my dad always used to say, so if you can't dazzle them with your brilliance, you baffle them with your BS. In the industry that we're in, I don't think there's any place for BS, right? What we do is too important. And at the end of the day, it's about kids. Right. And if we start filling up our day with BS, that's going to trickle down. The smell will permeate to the school sites. So one of my favorite opportunities is if I'm in an interview and someone doesn't know an answer to a question, and I expect there'll be at least one question, especially the higher up you get, where maybe you didn't have that hands-on experience and you don't have the answer. I don't want people to be afraid that they don't know. I want them to own that and tell me what they would do to figure out the answer. Right. Because there's going to be many, many things that pop up, regardless of which step you are in the organization, where you're not going to know the answer. And I want to know that you're a self-starter and that you have that entrepreneurial mindset and you're going to take ownership. Go figure it out. You know, and if that comes across the table in an interview, you get a lot of points for that.
So what you're saying is that the guy who once said next question in an interview that I did not hire gave the wrong answer.
Yes. Next question. And I don't know. That's a quick way to end the interview.
Yes, indeed. That, at least we had a lot of free time when that person ended early. So before we get into, you know, how you work your way through, and we've already started that, you know, there's a few things that I wanted to talk about. And some things are fresh in my mind because I just was on a screening panel interview for Tina's executive assistant in her district next door. And so I interviewed 7 people, or at least I was on a panel for 7 people, you know, last week, and they were all done on Zoom. And, you know, some things that I think it's important for all of our listeners, especially if you've worked for a district for a long time, and maybe you haven't interviewed in a while. First, we've talked about applying for the job that you want and writing your resume for that. Dress that way too. you know, dress in that interview, even if it is on video remotely, even if you came to work that day and you're going to spend an hour down the hall in a conference room talking to people on a panel, that day you are dressing for that next job that you want. So make sure that you always dress professionally. It's a real turnoff when, you know, somebody's, you know, wearing a t-shirt or kind of shabby clothing in their current job. You know, we're looking for people who can take that next step. And it really shows respect for the panel because they're probably wearing suits and ties. And then you come in all dressed casually, just makes us mad. So, you know, and the next is the attitude that you have in the interview. And again, talking to those people who have maybe been in their position for a long time, and maybe it's an internal promotion, don't assume you have that job, especially if you have the most experience. You want to go into that interview and hit it out of the park. You don't necessarily know who you're up against, and you got to bring your A game. You need to convince everybody, whether it's the screening panel or the final interview, that you're the right person for that job. And you can't just walk in there, plop yourself down on the chair, slouch, and say, here I am. You know, you really have to, you know, convince that panel that you are the right person.
You talked about not assuming that people know what you do. And I think that's one of the major faux pas from people that are internal candidates promoting within. They have a tendency to make assumptions that the people on the panel know what they do already. So they don't shamelessly promote themselves because they're making an assumption. And that's the biggest thing that somebody can do wrong for themselves when they're applying for a job inside.
Yeah, great point. Because, you know, Tina and I work in merit districts. And so that first level of screening are often people who don't work in the school district. And maybe they haven't read all of the materials. Maybe they're just coming in and, you know, doing kind of a cold read on you based off of your interview questions and scoring you that way. And so that's a great point. And, you know, I always say the interview is the one time when you're allowed to shamelessly promote yourself. That's why you are there. And I really don't like it when people start off by going, well, I really don't like talking about myself. Well, no, we're here to listen to you talk about yourself. So do that. So Aaron, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. And you nailed it right there. The interview is a sales pitch. It's a sales pitch of you. And if you're not willing to sell yourself, nobody else in the room is. So make sure that everybody knows everything that you want them to know about you. And that includes internal and external candidates and internal and external experience. Tell your story. Be thorough.
Yeah. And so just to pull it all together, and especially if you're doing it on some sort of virtual platform, amp up your energy level. You know, we're all tired of being on Zoom. We get it. But for a half hour, you've got to be really energetic to stand out. And if you're flat on the screen, it's going to be even worse on the other end. And so, you know, just definitely pour all your energy into that interview and show yourself to be, you know, a really outstanding candidate. If you are on that virtual platform, you lose a lot of the nuance when you're on a video screen, and you don't have the ability sometimes to even have a one-on-one connection with the people that are interviewing you. You might only have a little icon. You might even be recording just for yourself, and it might be reviewed later. And so you don't have that human feedback. So invent it and just push it. So yeah, before we move on, Matt, you wanted to talk about that a little bit more?
Just real quick. Thanks, Eric. You know, I couldn't agree more about bringing energy. And I want to connect it back to what Aaron said about practice, practice, practice. It's tough to bring energy if you don't know what you're going to say, right? Because you're spending all of your energy trying to figure out what you're going to say. And, you know, one of the quotes, I think this might've been Bill McGuire who brought this up in our FICMAP program. You know, everyone goes into a situation like that with nerves. It's going to happen, right? Even if you are a seasoned interviewer or interviewee, you're going to have nerves. And the difference between a good speaker with public speaking and a great speaker is how quickly you get over those nerves. And so practicing is not only going to help you get over those nerves because you know what you're going to say. Now you can focus on bringing that energy into the interview as well.
All right. So Matt, Aaron mentioned, you know, being able to tell your story. So take us through some interviewing techniques. What's your advice on handling the introduction that Aaron had mentioned, the close that he also mentioned, and then the questions in between? What advice can you give for handling those aspects of the interview?
Thanks for the question, Tina. You know, one thing that I've learned from Aaron that, you know, I always knew it, but Aaron just has this energy about him where you're like, when he says something, I'm going to listen. And one thing that I've heard him say over and over is in the interview, you know, tell your story. And when you sit down, you know, each district or charter school has different ways they interview the candidates. Some have the questions in front of you, some don't. Regardless of what the questions are, you want to get your licks in. You want to get your talking points in. And the easiest way to do that is you hijack that first question. Regardless of what the question is, if they ask you, you know, why do you want this job? Say, well, I'm going to get to that, but first I'd like to give you some things about me. You connect that back to the practice, right? Because if you practice that answer enough and you nail that first question, you're off and running. And as folks who speak publicly, you know, all of us on the podcast here today, you get those first 30 seconds out of the way and you're off and running. And it's almost second nature to you what comes next, because you're no longer thinking about what you're going to say. You just say it. So you got to tell your story, whether it's in the first question, if there's an opportunity to tell your story after the last question with a conclusion, I think the rest of it comes together. And I said it earlier and I'll say it again. There's going to be a question you don't know the answer to. Okay. Don't think of this as an opportunity to pull a rabbit out of a hat. Be honest. Say, I don't know, but here's what I would do to go figure that out.
So, you know, the thing about answering the questions, the advice I have for people is answer the question. And not only that, answer all of the questions. You know, often when we're recapping afterwards, we say, you know, this person didn't answer that question at all. Or they answered the first half, but they never got to the second half, which was the most important. And as Matt just said, you know, different districts do it differently. Sometimes the questions are in front of you and you can read them. And if they are, that's great. Other times you're listening and it's okay to say, did I answer all of that? Was there a second part of that that I could address? And that opens the door, because sometimes, you know, you're focused on one thing and you might have forgotten about another piece. And the interviewers are always happy to say, oh yeah, here's the second half of that question. They go, and you just say, oh great, thank you. And then you answer that piece. And people understand that you're in your own head. And, you know, sometimes you need them to reframe the question. So don't be afraid to do that. It's much better that you ask to repeat than you just leave something hanging. And then they wonder, does this person even know, were they intentionally avoiding answering the second half of the question because they didn't know anything, or
they know, baffle me with BS?
Yes, exactly. You know? Yeah, Aaron.
So regarding the interview questions, if you come across a stumper, be forthright. Let them know, I haven't done that directly, but here's something that I've done in a past job that I think is similar. And talk about that and talk about what the problem was and how you conquered that and what the results were. Want to make a point here that I haven't made in our presentation before, because this recently came to light. Do not talk disparagingly about prior jobs or prior bosses. It only makes you look bad. We're in a customer service industry where everybody that we talk to is our customer. So be mindful of that. Everybody, if you don't have something nice to say, then skip it. It's not part of your story. Move forward and continue on telling what your best story is. There's no need to dig dirt. We all have dirt. We all know what we've gone through that was tough. And there's a time and a place. And in the interview is not the time or the place.
Well, then I'll have to rewrite my first question, which is, do you have any gossip for us? That's always my first question that I ask in an interview. No, no, Matt, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, and I would even go the other direction on that. If there's an opportunity to give praise to the team that you're currently working with, there's nothing wrong with giving praise, because we all know we can't do this job alone. And, you know, one of the things you had mentioned Ron Bennett earlier, Eric, so I'll take an opportunity to mention him here. The best way to be successful is to surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. Acknowledging the people that are around you that have contributed to where you are today is not a bad thing at all. And, you know, you see sports now, and my favorite sports athletes are the ones, they're great in their own right, but they recognize they can't be as great as they are without the teammates that are around them and supporting them. So giving praise is not a bad thing in an interview.
Exactly. So I'm just going to throw this out, and whoever wants to answer this, how do you answer that final question, which is, do you have any questions for us?
So I'm going to jump in because the sales pitch, again, getting back to that, this is the story of you. And if you are not taking the opportunity to close the deal and leave the interview panel wanting more of you, then you are missing a prime opportunity. So you want to basically kind of recap a little bit of what you told them in your introduction, kind of talk a little bit about some things that you may have covered during the interview, but then you want to save something for the end. It can be specific to what you do. It can be about your attitude or your work ethic. I've used before, if you want somebody who's going to be the hardest worker, who's going to be here in the morning before everybody else, who stays late, who's going to make sure that the project gets done and does it all with a great attitude, this might be a good fit. And I'd like to thank you again for your time.
How about you, Matt?
Boy, that's a tough act to follow, but I'll share my thoughts.
Well, I noticed that he didn't answer the question, but go ahead, Matt.
You know, when I think about using that opportunity to ask a question, I'm always very intrigued to hear what questions are asked. And asking no questions to me is not an option. You should walk in there with a couple questions in your back pocket. And, you know, I loved Aaron's input. If starting with that, ending with that, that's fine. But show me that you're inquisitive, right? And all this stuff connects together. It may seem very siloed as we talk about it. All these pieces connect together to show who you are as a person. And if you've got a question during the interview where you say, I don't know, but here's what I would do, or here's another scenario that I went through that kind of resembles the answer to that question, even though I haven't done what was asked of me in that question, you then get to the end, you ask questions of the panel. You know, what is your favorite thing about working here? What do you guys look for in a qualified candidate? It shows that you want to learn more about that job, about that district or charter school or county office. And it shows that you want to learn, right? You're not comfortable with who you are right now. You want to continue to grow. And that goes a long way for me.
Yeah. I mean, those are some great suggestions, and I'll come back to the bad ones that I've heard people say, but yeah, asking, you know, what are the top priorities for the person who gets this position, or, you know, is there anything that, you know, that's critical that this person's going to need to come in and change or address? You know, those are things that you can't get on a website and might be worth asking. But before we get back to my bad examples, Aaron, did you want to add some more good ones?
I just wanted to jump in there too and say, don't show up with a list of 20 questions that you want to ask the interview panel.
Yeah.
Don't be that guy or girl. It's annoying on the interview panel. You're trying to show us up. You know, ask a couple of key questions, like Matt said, and maybe the last one should be, what's your time frame for letting the candidates know? Keep it simple.
Yeah. And those 20 questions, you know, those are the ones that come to mind. And, you know, it's bothersome when you get a sense that the person you just spent anywhere from 25 to 45 minutes has no idea who you are as a district. And when they ask something like, is this a high school district or unified? Or, you know, what's your average daily attendance? Or how big is your budget? Or, you know, these things that are just so central to who the district is, that you should have already looked at all of those things. You should already know that it doesn't matter, you know, what position you're applying for. You know, we all are CBOs here and we're leaning a little more fiscal, but, you know, it could be a maintenance director position and you would already want to know how many schools are in this district and how many students. You know, it could be, you know, any number of positions, and you're going to get a sense of who that district is. So know where you're applying before you apply and do your research on the district, so you're not asking those really basic things. So Matt, some others you wanted to add to the list?
Yeah, you know, I think even worse than that, more of a cardinal sin, is a question, do I have to start on step A or can I go straight to step E based on my experience?
So I had someone ask me at the end of an interview, what are the hours for this position? Is it 8 to 5? And, you know, obviously we're not going to work people till, you know, they're tired and gray, but probably not the best question to ask as you're closing up an interview, right? So to kind of touch upon that, Aaron, in looking at your job history, it looks like you were never afraid to do other duties as assigned, right? So talk to me about how that is beneficial for getting that promotion.
So thank you, Tina. The key to that is, we talked a little bit earlier about volunteerism. Heard Matt say before, be a volunteer, not a voluntold. And what that gets at is be the one who's going to be key captain on the team before you're an actual manager on the team. And what can you find that what duties can help the team out? And they're also going to make me more valuable on the team. And I'm also going to be seen as the one who is willing to put the extra effort in for others to help them succeed. You know, we don't get anywhere unless we all get there. Right? So everybody's got to cross that finish line. We all have to be willing to do more. And sometimes it just takes one person who shows that they're willing to take that, go up that extra mile to trigger others. Like, I'm going to do a little bit extra more. And I'm going to learn something today that I didn't know yesterday. And I'm going to ask that question. And I'm going to go and I'm going to better myself, and I'm going to make myself better for down the road.
Matt, did you have something that you wanted to add?
Yeah. And just to tack on to that, you know, if you're really looking to make the next step in your career, what better training than on the job training for that next role when that's really not your responsibility, right? You get to learn how to do something before you're responsible for it. Not only does it show the initiative that Aaron talked about, it leads by example, but you get that training now so that when you are ready to go take that next step, when you're ready to go in for that interview, you can talk about things that you were doing now that really were for that next role. And I can't think of a better real life example in an interview to say, I did this even when I didn't have to.
Absolutely. And Aaron didn't mention that you had 13 job titles in 15 years. Was that the number?
That's
or did
accurate.
I get that backwards? Was it 15 and 13 years?
It was 13 and 15. And many of them were within one organization, when I was starting out within San Juan Unified. That was an opportunity for me to learn exactly as I just talked about, to become an expert, to become a sponge, to be helpful for everybody. I knew I wanted to be the CBO someday. You don't just jump there. You got to learn everything. And we all come from a different place. And we all have different expertise. So food service became my expertise. And later on, special education became my expertise. And county run operations became my expertise. So we all have different things that we can get really good at. And that helps you out when you're interviewing for that next position that you want, because they know you a little bit, or they know that by your reference checks, that you're the one who has gone the extra mile and who's put in that time to better themselves. And the people who are losing you, they're very sad to lose you, but they know that you're going to be good where you go. And that's from my side of the chair now. That's what I'm trying to do. I want people who can come through that I can train up, and then I can send out into the district to be the director or the CBO. And I'm going to know that they've learned great things from working with me.
And so, yeah, you beat me in the number of jobs and number of years. But, you know, when I started at San Dieguito, you know, here I had an English degree from San Diego State. So this is why I don't disparage Chico State, Matt. And so I had an English degree and a risk management background. I mean, nobody had that, but I took on every little project. And it was about every year and a half that I was getting either new responsibilities, new title, new promotion, you know, as I worked my way up. And one day, you know, one of my employees, you know, said to me, wow, you've got the golden ticket. Like, how do you do this? They're always promoting you. And I knew something about this employee. And I said, well, if you ever say that's not in my job description, it never will be. And, you know, it's the same thing of, you know, hey, show you can do the job, and then they'll give you the job. When I started at San Dieguito, I remember an assistant principal saying, why weren't you at the leadership team meeting yesterday? And I said, I'm not in the leadership team. And he said, oh, well, we're going to have to change that. So, but I acted in a certain way, and it just became natural that people just assumed I was already a director when I was an analyst. So Tina, what would you like to add to that?
So Aaron, I thought I had it bad with your 13 and 15. I had 8 and 18, and it was all within the County Office of Education, similar to Eric. It was like every 2 years or so. But the joke around the hill is what we called the County Office of Ed was, I would go into the cafeteria and people would say, what department are you working in now? That was like the joke, you know, around the county office, because I moved around a lot, all for promotional opportunities, but yes.
Tina, Matt always likes to poke fun at me and say, well, Aaron's been at 4 county offices out of 58. He's collecting them all.
Yeah, they're not Pokemon, Aaron. You don't have to collect them all.
It's like Girl Scout badges, Eric. That's more of the analogy I see there.
Well, you know, he is wearing a sash. None of our listeners can see this, but there is a sash with all of his merit badges on there, which is a step up from the tank top that Aaron said he was going to wear for this.
It's very stylish, though. Would you agree?
Yeah, it is. It goes with your eyes. Let's move on, shall we? There's two important aspects of earning that next job, and it's the technical abilities and it is the leadership skills. And we've touched about on this, and you know, we learn those technical skills on the job through workshops and other experiences. But to be successful in management, you need to be a great leader. So let's talk about the characteristics that are important to superintendents and CBOs that they look for when they evaluate employees for promotion, and how CASBO can help develop these crucial soft skills. Aaron, Matt, feel free to jump in here. You know, what do you look for in future leaders?
You know, as far as a future leader, I'm going to give just a quick little background, and then I'll get into a couple characteristics. And I'm sure Aaron has a couple as well that he looks for. What I always share with folks is don't confuse hierarchy with leadership, right? Don't wait until you're in the top job before thinking that you are now a leader in your organization. You can be a leader at any level in your organization. And if you practice and you really take the bull by the horns and take that as a challenge, because no one's ever going to be a perfect leader. That's an area where we will always continue to grow and evolve and learn. And if you can get practice in your current role of being leader and recognizing that you are a leader, it's going to make leading that much easier when you get to the top. You know, one is the loneliest number. And when you're at the top, everyone's looking at you. But for me, one of the strongest characteristics of a leader is recognizing the characteristics where you are weakest in. You yourself are weakest in. And I'll share with you an example. When we went through the FICMAT CBO program, we had to take the StrengthsFinder test. And, you know, you can look at this in two ways. You could say, you know, the five strengths that were identified for me, those are my areas where I am the strongest. And I agree 100% with those. And you can stop there, right? Or, and this is what I chose to do, I'm going to go down to the bottom of that list and figure out which strengths I'm weakest at, figure out why I'm weak at those, and think about how strengthening those will make me a better leader overall. And, you know, my classmates, I joke with them about this, and Aaron gives me a hard time, but one of my lowest ranking skills was empathy. Yeah. You guys are all laughing right now.
Surprise!
I'm identifying with you.
Because you know it's true. And I will say that people who don't recognize they don't have empathy, they're like stupid people. They don't know they're stupid, right? And not having empathy, until someone waved the flag in my face and like, Matt, you are a rub some dirt on it kind of person, that's not real endearing as a leader. That is not going to bring people up around you and instill trust and confidence. And it's going to be tough to make the deposits into the emotional bank account if you can't show empathy. And that is an area without the FICMAT program that was, you know, resulting in the CASBO CBO certification, I still probably would have been blind to that, right? So recognize your own weaknesses, being able to connect with others, really, really important.
Great point, Matt. And to build on that, I think that you have a lot of your basic characteristics of a great leader, being able to listen, being able to respect others, being able to help them and grow them, but also being able to let them fall and fail and pick themselves back up. Those are also just as important in their own growth and giving them the opportunity to get back on the horse and try again. I want to point out something that I think is probably one of the most important aspects of leadership that I try to teach people here and people I've worked with before, is the ability to protect your attitude. Okay. And what I mean by this is anybody can be having a terrible day that you come across, and they're going to let you have it. And what are you going to do with that? Are you going to absorb it and let it become how you're going to be for the rest of the day, and you're going to be mad or sad or whatever? Or do you have a shield that protects your attitude and you're going to be positive and helpful no matter what? This is important at two levels. Before you're a manager, if you can't protect your attitude and people see that you lose it and you get mad easy and you don't have any control over yourself, managers are going to see that and they're going to say, that is not the right person for this position or for the promotion that I've been thinking of. As a manager, when you can't protect your attitude, everybody you lead looks at you and says, well, they shouldn't be my leader anymore. I have no confidence in them anymore. I'm not going to definitely listen to them anymore. they tune you out. It's so imperative to stay in control of yourself, be in control of your thoughts and what you say. You know, they always say that don't reply when you're mad, right? Don't hit send when you're mad. But when we're in conversations, it's so easy to be quick and what you think comes out. Pause, take 3 seconds, get good at that. Get good at recognizing that you don't want to make necessarily an emotional response, but that you want to make a response that's helpful to the situation.
Very good points. Thank you. Tracy, I want to come to you and just talk a little bit about what's new with the CASBO Business Executive Leadership Program, as we're talking about leadership and what we're looking for in future leaders. And how has that been reshaped to develop the next generation of school business leaders?
Thank you, Tina. Everything that everyone said is really relevant, because a program like CASBO's BEL, or Business Executive Leadership Program, it creates a well-rounded curriculum for individuals that want to learn in a cohort. And there are other programs out there like FICMAT. Two universities have programs that can lead toward the CBO, but the CASBO program, with us being a statewide association and me coming on board having a background in credentialing and certification, our goal is to scale the program so more people have access to it. That's really, really important. Cohort size is growing in a way that will still allow a small community of learners to come together around a set curriculum. And what we've learned over time is that adults are busy and adults are very afraid of long-term commitment in learning. And so we are refining that curriculum and making sure that every piece of knowledge is applicable to practice. We have a Sonoma cohort running in person right now, and we've moved that from a 14-month program to a 10-month program. That was the first attempt at being conducive to adult learners. The next thing that we're exploring, we've moved to an application process, a very, very simple, short, 5-minute application process, although you need to have a resume ready to upload. The application process will allow us not only to screen the cohorts, but blend them into a group of learners that is more cohesive. We have one program for aspiring CBOs. That can be at the director level. That can be people coming in from an outside profession that still need things, have things to learn about school business. And then we have an accelerated CBO program. So we're trying to keep people within a structure of curriculum that all lead to the CBO exam pathway, but let people learn with a cohort that they feel equally challenged with and that they can grow with. The accelerated CBO program is going to be 6 months online. That's way down from the 14-month commitment. And then the aspiring program, we want to keep that one in person, and that's going to be somewhere between 9 and 10 months. So the opportunities to grow the Business Executive Leadership Program, to scale the number of people that get through, that still have access. We know how difficult it is for people to travel and people in remote locations. And we're really refining that curriculum through using subject matter experts like all of you out there. Part of it is not only building the community of the people you learn with, but it's building the community of people you learn from. So the BEL program is going to have extensive collaborations with more CBOs. We want to bring more members of CASBO into that training. And Aaron mentioned that somebody lifts me up and then I put my hand back down and I pull others up. That's what we're looking for. So we want to hear from many of you that can email us at countmein@casbo.org. Tell us that you want to help. Tell us what you want to teach. Tell us where your strengths are in contributing back to that community. So we're really looking for others that want to teach and contribute into the program. And we're structuring it around today's adult learner, building competency frameworks, building application and exercises that people can grow with. And it's scary. We have people in the first 2 weekends saying, I don't want to stay in. I don't think I know enough. And we reach back out and we say, this is exactly why you're here. This is exactly why you're here. As adults are afraid to learn, you know, so we want to take that fear out. We want to connect you to the content and coming back around, connect you to a great community. So, you know, please join us in learning together, learn with us and give back to others.
Thank you for pulling those people back in and keeping them in, because if there's one thing all of us who have been doing this for a while want, and that's to be proud of our colleagues. And, you know, we want them to have the same level of knowledge and professionalism and expertise, and to be proud of our colleagues next door. And, you know, that's what these programs will do. So we're going to wrap it up here pretty soon. But before then, you know, we talked a lot about the CASBO community and volunteerism and how that can create that network for yourself and those connections. And beyond the formal professional development programs that CASBO offers, like Bell, or the state and local conferences, there are opportunities to get involved and to be seen in your local section as a leader in your discipline. And that's how many of us got involved and got recognized. We're always looking for people in CASBO to get involved in their professional council. It's a great way to meet your peers, learn from them in an informal way, make a friend in a district in the same region that you can reach out to, hear good ideas from them and steal them, and then tell your boss they were your own. Then you make those connections and maybe you put on a workshop at your local section. It's a wonderful opportunity to get noticed and to stand out from the crowd. And then when you're ready, volunteer to be on your section board and maybe oust Aaron from his president position in the Sacramento section. But you'll be surrounded by school business leaders from throughout your region and across all of our many disciplines in school business who are devoted to and improving the way we do our work. And so, you know, we cannot stress enough, get involved with CASBO at the local level and avail yourself of everything that we have to offer.
With all that being said, Tracy, how can a listener get involved in CASBO?
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing up the sections and the professional councils. What many people don't understand is sections are regional. And so, you know, defining that, that's really in your grassroots area. That's the surrounding communities, the surrounding districts, getting to know people within a physical location in California. And then the other, the professional councils, that's slicing and dicing by the role that you do or the roles that you're responsible for or overseeing. This can be down to school nutrition. This is IT services. This is maintenance and operation. It's also an opportunity for you to engage in a professional council that is outside your area of current practice. You can be a volunteer and learn and attend sessions at annual conferences or at section conferences. And you should attend sessions outside of your professional practice area, because that's how you grow. You maybe have heard of a T-shaped person, where you're growing broadly. You're growing across, because you can't necessarily go up in title until you understand the breadth of the entire profession. So it's a real opportunity to engage. You can raise your hand to volunteer for the section, it local to you. Please contact us, CASBO staff. And again, count me in at CASBO.org is a great place to start. Reach out and say, how can I get involved? These are the areas I'm interested in. We will connect you to someone in your section leadership. We will connect you to someone in your PC. And or we have opportunities to start right at the state level with some short-term opportunities. And as many of you on this podcast have learned, sometimes there's a vacancy and they'll pull you right in and they say, come help us plan this event, you know, come help us develop a session. And so sometimes you get gracefully in through other leaders, and sometimes you jump on right in. As you know, when there's a problem at work, we're all here and we know how to fix it. So please join us in volunteer leadership. It grows your resume. It grows your communication skills, which enhance your interviewing skills.
Tracy, I want to say that, so I grew up in San Diego County. I'm born and raised, live in San Diego County, but I grew up in San Diego County in terms of the first 25 years of my career. When I landed my first CBO role, it was in Orange County. So I was leaving the world that I knew to a place that I didn't know. And one of the very first things I did was reached out to the CASBO section leadership and said, do you have a space on your exec board for me? Because I needed a community of people that I knew would help support me, just so that I can get to know some people who knew the area and were familiar with people. That was where I went. So crazy me, I'm starting a new CBO role and I volunteer for section leadership, but it was a way, that's my safe space. You know, I've said that CASB was my village. That's my safe space. And so that's one of the first things that I did. Aaron, do you have anything that you want to add in relation to your experience with section leadership?
I do, Tina, and thank you. And thank you, Tracy, for really highlighting how important getting involved at the section and the PC level is. And Tina, for providing a little window into what it's like, because sometimes when you're going through this, it's like running around chicken with their head cut off. And where do I go next? And am I going the right way? And I don't know. So I got involved at the local level, attended a few accounting PC meetings, because I figured, well, that's probably where I belong because I'm in business. And then I jumped into a couple of risk management meetings just to see what they were doing and what that was about. And then I learned that financial services PC had been dormant for a few years. And I asked, there's something that I can do? And they said, yeah, absolutely. Let's go. Start talking to people and let's get a team together and let's have a few meetings and we can get some people to come in and talk to us and make everybody better. It starts from when you don't know what's next, this is the answer. And Tracy speaks the truth to you folks. Getting involved is the best way to do it.
Thank you all so much. We appreciate the time that you've spent with us. Thank you for your sharing your experiences and for sharing how members can get involved. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you to our guests.
Thank you for having us today.
Thank you.
If you have any feedback, you can follow CASB on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. With everything going on, you don't want to miss an episode.
CASB Connect, the voice of school business, is a production of CASB, the California Association of School Business Officials. Smart business, smart schools.